This is a picture of my two children. There's my daughter, Annabelle, and my son, Mitchell. And as you look at this picture, you can tell that they have the same eyes, they have the same smile. But can I tell you, when it comes to colouring in, they're worlds apart. When my daughter colours in, it looks like this. Every single stroke is meticulously placed. Everything is inside the lines. In fact, if one stroke goes outside the lines, it's a disaster. She scrunches up the sheet of paper, throws it in the bin, and she needs to start all over again. But, well, my son, his colouring in looks like this. Lines are just optional extras. He couldn't care less where he colours in. He couldn't care less what he colours in. And sometimes he couldn't care less who he colours in. See, when it comes to colouring, which one are you more like? Are you like my daughter or my son? Are you the one who is meticulous? Or are you the one who is carefree? Are you the one who is focused? Or are you the one, how shall we put it, who's creative? Are you the one who's thorough? Or are you the one who just goes with the flow? When it comes to colouring in, which one are you more like? Or which one are your work colleagues like? Or which one are your family members like? But perhaps the better question is this: how can we bring the best out of each? Now, often the advice would be to ask one to become like the other. You know, Annabelle, you just need to be a little bit more relaxed. Be more carefree. It doesn't matter if one stroke goes outside the lines. Be more like Mitchell. Or maybe for my son, you know, Mitchell, we're glad you got all that creative energy, but why don't we channel that inside the lines? See, often the way to bring the best out of somebody is to ask them to become something they're not. See, often the best way to bring the best out of somebody, the advice is to ask them to become something they're not. But is there another way to bring the best out of people? Well, welcome to CPC. If it's your first time here, it's great that you could join us online. My name is Mark Leong. I work for a different organization called City Bible Forum, and I'm one of their public speakers. And I've been invited by CPC to do a series. And the title of the series is Unlocked, Maximizing Your Potential. It's a three-week series. And the goal of this series is this, is to see, is there a better way to bring out the best in our personalities without asking somebody to become something they're not? And during this three-week series, we're going to unlock three different personalities. This week, we're going to unlock the perfectionist. Next week, we're going to look at the divergent. And lastly, we'll look at the battler. Because if we can unlock these personalities, then we can leave today not only understanding who we are, but how we could be better, better friends, better family members, better work colleagues, or perhaps understand somebody who is like this a little bit better. Alternatively, if we can't unlock these personalities, I suspect that we'll go through life frustrated with ourselves, frustrated with another person who is like this, who we can't understand, and we'll live life with this lurking unease that perhaps life could have been better. And can I suggest from the outset that knowing Jesus is the best way to unlock these three personalities? So today, let's start off with the first personality, the perfectionist. And the talk will be divided into three parts. Part number one, I'm going to define what a perfectionist. The middle part, I'm going to walk in a perfectionist's shoes. See what are the advantages and disadvantages of being a perfectionist. And the last part of the talk, I'm going to ask this question. What difference does Jesus make to the perfectionist? Does Jesus say to the perfectionist, you know what, chill out, relax? Does Jesus ask the perfectionist to become something they're not? Or does he provide a different way to bring out the best in each of these people? So let's begin with the first part of the talk, which is to define what is a perfectionist. And as part of my research, I looked at some psychological journals, and this is one definition I came across. A perfectionist is a person who strives for flawlessness, setting excessively high performance standards, and is overly critical in self-evaluations and overly concerned regarding others' evaluations. Now, that's a bit of a mouthful, so let me break it down for you into three different markers of a perfectionist. And they all begin with the letter S. So a perfectionist is somebody who has a certain standard. And what's the standard? It's flawlessness. Their standard is perfection. They aim for up here. The second mark of a perfectionist is that they are self-critical. They not only judge others, but they judge, measure, and rate their own performance. And finally, that last marker of a perfectionist is this, that they're sensitive. They're overly concerned regarding others' evaluations. A perfectionist is influenced by what other people think. The three S's, there's a high standard, they're self-critical, and they're sensitive. Or to make it more concrete, when you were a kid, did your coloring look like this, or did it look like this? See, are you a perfectionist today? Or do you work with or live with someone who is a perfectionist? So we've defined a perfectionist. Let's go to the middle part of the talk and let's walk in a perfectionist's shoes and see what are the advantages and disadvantages. Let's see what are the advantages and disadvantages of having a high standard, of being self-critical and being sensitive. Now, I'm guessing most of you don't know me, but when it comes to my story, I am an ABC. That's right. I'm an Australian-born Chinese, which means I'm a mix of East and West Australian and Asian cultures, which means that I barrack for the Swans, which means that I eat a meat pie with tomato sauce, but it also means that I've walked around with an umbrella as a sunshade. Now, as part of being an ABC, I eat at both Asian and Western restaurants. And I don't know, have you noticed how different they are? See, when it comes to Asian restaurants, it's all about quantity. How many people can we get through the door? And a classic example of this is Yum Cha. What is Yum Cha? Yum Cha is basically Asian fast foods on wheels. It's like Uber Eats, but rather than being outside on the road, it's inside in a restaurant. They're literally bringing the food to you. And they don't just bring the food to you, they yell out the order, almost forcing you to order. What is it about? Char siu, siu mai, and coconut jelly. Quick, grab this food. And sometimes when you rock up to a Yum Cha, the table's not even set for you. You have to wait while the table is being set. And have you noticed at Yum Cha, they have this secret billing system, this card where they just stamp, stamp, stamp. What's the whole point of that? It's so they can take you, they can get you off the table so you can queue up at the cashier rather than taking up the table so they can quickly get somebody else in. See, when it comes to the Asian dining experience, it's all about quantity. Let's get as many people through. Western restaurants, on the other hand, well, it's all about quality. It's about the ambiance, the mood lighting, the background music, the view. You know, tables are preset, napkins are pressed, and you sit down and you pause and peruse the menu at your leisure. No one's yelling the order at you. You have time and experience to just dine. See, while Asian restaurants are all about the quantity, Western restaurants are all about the quality. And that is a feature of being a perfectionist. There is a quality in everything they do. That is the S, the standard. They have a high standard. And having a high standard leads to two different advantages. And the first advantage is, if you're a perfectionist, you are rigorous and thorough. See, if you are to maintain a high standard, that means no stone is left unturned when you work or when you try an activity. You're committed to this high standard, and so you are rigorous. That's one of the advantages. But because high standards don't just come without a dedication, they're actually not possible without dedication. The other advantage is this: you are self-motivated. Perfectionists are committed, self-driven, and focused to maintain that high standard. And you can tell that by the photos a perfectionist takes. Now, I've never been to the Louvre, but if I were to go to the Louvre, this is the kind of photo I would take. I just say, hey, grab a picture. I'm standing in front of it, and I just want to capture the memory. But this is what a photo of a perfectionist would look like. Wow. Do you see the lighting, the positioning, the proportions, even the props to invert the Louvre? See, when you see something executed at the highest standard, you can't but just have your breath taken away. It's beautiful. See, they're the advantages of being a perfectionist. But while there are advantages, there are disadvantages as well. So let's look at those. Now, here is a glass. For some, this is a glass that is 9/10 full. But for a perfectionist, what do they see? They see the 1/10 that is missing. Because a perfectionist can only celebrate when everything is full, when everything is complete, whenever it's perfect. And so rather than seeing all the steps that have been taken, a perfectionist can only see how far short they still are. And that means that a perfectionist has thin thankfulness. They're not thankful for all the steps that have been taken. All they see is the gap that is still missing. See, the glass is always 1/10 empty. And the other disadvantage is this, that for them, rest is evasive. See, perfectionists are never satisfied. And on top of that, they're influenced or sensitive to what others think. So what was the other S? They're self-critical and they're sensitive. And when you put those two S's together, they form a powerful but dangerous and potent combination. Why? Because when a perfectionist achieve something, when they do reach perfection, every achievement is soured because you know what? It could have been done a little bit better. It could have been done a little bit sooner. It could have been acknowledged by others a little bit wider, or I could have been thanked a little bit more. See, for a perfectionist, rest is tantalizingly close, but never experienced in full because they're self-critical. It could have been better. And they're sensitive. Somebody could have been pleased more. See, being a perfectionist then is really a mixed bag. It's like this jar of metal bits. There are some really, really good bits, the nuts and bolts that I can use again, but then there are sharp objects like nails and washers that just don't fit anything. So who can make sense of this mixed bag? Who can provide order to it? Well, I've looked at the first part, we've defined perfectionism. Looked at the middle part. What are the advantages and disadvantages? Now let's look at the final part. How do you and how are perfectionists unlocked? And for this, we're going to ask the question, what Jesus does Jesus make? Or better still, what does Jesus do with this mixed bag of advantages and disadvantages? Does Jesus call out to the perfectionist, you know what? You just need to drop your standards. You just need to relax a little. You need to become something that you're not, or does Jesus provide another way? Now, for this section, we're going to look at a particular person, a person who was a perfectionist, but then met Jesus, and we're going to compare a before and after. What were they like before they met Jesus, and what were they like after they met Jesus? And this person has a name. This person is Paul. Now, Paul lived in the first century. He lived in the Middle East. So he's a real person who lived on this earth. He actually was one of the earliest followers of Jesus and became one of the church leaders. And he wrote a little biography. This is what my life was like in a part of the Bible. And we're going to read it right now. This is how Paul describes his life. If anyone else thinks he has reasons to put confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews. In regard to the law, a Pharisee, as for zeal, persecuting the church, as for legalistic righteousness, faultless. Now, as you look at Paul's description of his life, it's clear that there are some unique cultural expressions that are for the first century when he was born. But the first century perfectionist is the same as the 21st century perfectionist, as then, so now. And as you look at Paul's life, here is a worker who had a very high standard. There was quality in everything he did. What did he say? In terms of legalistic righteousness, he was faultless. That's the perfectionist standard, isn't it? But that was just his actions. How about his job? Well, his job was that of a Pharisee. In regard to the law, a Pharisee. Now, a Pharisee was a religious leader in the first century, and they were known, well known, to be people who not only satisfy the law, but go even further. They monitored their own life constantly to make sure they were in line and even did a little bit more. See, when it came to the law, God's law, Paul thought, hey, I've got all my bases covered. I'm fully compliant. I've passed all the tests. Now, if this was Paul's full story, you can't but help but think this guy would have been a little bit smug, a little bit arrogant. In fact, if he was a work colleague, he'd be a bit of a jerk to work with. Why? Because he'd nitpick on every single mistake. He'd be the one who looks, scours for every detail on the ask, why isn't this up to the best standard? Because that was his standard. He was perfect. He satisfied the law. He was faultless. But then what happened was Paul's story intersected with Jesus' story. So what happens then when Paul, a perfectionist, meets and understands Jesus' story, what Jesus said, what he did, his teachings, the fact that Jesus died and came back to life at that first Easter? What happens when those two stories intersect? Well, let's read on. But whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. What? What we hear here or read here is that Paul the perfectionist viewed his version of perfectionism as bankrupt. What did he say? Whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss. This is typical perfectionist terms, isn't it? You either have perfection or nothing. It's either profit or loss. And when Paul met Jesus' story, he realized his version of perfectionism was nothing. So then how does Jesus unlock the perfectionist? What does he say? Well, the clue is actually given in the last sentence of this section, and it's this. What is more, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus. Paul the perfectionist actually found something greater. Not less, but something even more perfect. See, Jesus didn't tell Paul, you know what, Paul, you're a perfectionist, but you need to lower your standards. No, Jesus ups the game and says, Paul, you're craving and looking for perfection, but I'm going to offer you something even more perfect, something which even surpasses what you have. See, Jesus opened a greater form of perfectionism than Paul had to start with. See, when Paul heard and understand who Jesus was and what he did, Paul realized that, one, Jesus understood him. Jesus understood that he was a perfectionist. He would have heard Jesus say, Paul, yes, I know you're a perfectionist. I know that rest is evasive for you. I know that you always view the glass as one-tenth full. But Paul also saw Jesus, met him where he was at. Jesus met him as a perfectionist. Hey, Paul, I know you're craving perfection. I'm not going to tell you to somehow lower your standards or aim for less, but I am going to tell you that the way you're going about it, it's just going to grind you down because you know what? You're never going to be perfect. You change, people change, the circumstances around you change. So the only way you're ever going to be perfect is if someone who is perfect shares that with you. Someone who is perfect gives you the status of being perfect. And at the very first Easter, when I died and rose again, that's what I did for you, Paul. I, who was perfect, shared my perfection with you. And so now, Paul, you can rest because you know what? You are perfect before me. You don't need to be sensitive because I see you as complete. Now you actually can see how full your life is. Rather than the one-tenth missing, you can see all the small steps, all the things that you've already been given. And because you're now secure, you don't need to be sensitive. You're secure. Go. Run hard. Press on. Be rigorous. Be focused. Be driven. And that is what Paul did. Let's read on. But I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. Brothers, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead, I press on toward the goal. See, Jesus gave Paul the security to be a perfectionist in the right and healthy way. Jesus curtailed those disadvantages by saying, Paul, you are perfect before me. And by doing so, he magnified the strengths of a perfectionist. Jesus unleashed the potential of Paul's perfectionism. See, being a perfectionist without Jesus really is a mixed bag. But being a perfectionist with Jesus is life without the baggage. But it's actually life to the full. Now, this is Brené Brown. She's a TED speaker, and she has a show on Netflix, and she's spent more than a decade researching perfectionism. And this is in her book, The Gifts of Imperfection. This is how she describes perfectionists. Perfectionism never happens in a vacuum. It touches everyone around us. We pass it down to our children. We infect our workplace with impossible expectations, and it's suffocating for our family and friends. Being a perfectionist really is a mixed bag. We hurt ourselves, and if we're honest, we actually hurt others as well. But knowing Jesus changes that. Why? Because Jesus shows us a new way to be perfect or to be a perfectionist. Rather than asking perfectionists to take a step down to become something they're not, he unlocks who they are. He maximizes the strength but minimizes the disadvantages. He frees them up from the disadvantages because he says, my perfection, I'm going to give to you. I'm going to give you my status. So you don't need to be self-critical. And I see you as perfect. In fact, Brené Brown kind of teases us a little bit, gives a little teaser of what that life looks like in the rest of a quote, the rest of this quote. What does she say? Thankfully, compassion also spreads quickly when we're kind to ourselves. We create a reservoir of compassion that we can extend to others. How can a perfectionist be more compassionate to themselves? How can they find rest and satisfaction? How can they be thankful? Well, for Paul, he found that in Jesus. So someone who loved him just the way he was, who met him as a perfectionist, who poured his compassion into him by freeing him. See, Paul found in Jesus that he could be a perfectionist and have life to the full at the same time. See, Jesus unlocks perfectionists. Will you let Jesus unlock you? Thanks.